Well, happy Thursday and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for tuning in our direction on your radio and also listening online. And if you would like to join our conversation at any point in our discussion this morning, you just pick up the phone and dial 414-1234 in the Tallahassee area. If long distance from you to us, it's 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. And if you want to tweet us, we have that option available for you. That's at WFSU Perspective. Well, not just anecdotal evidence, but also there's some pretty hard respected research now suggesting that even professional women with good jobs, successful careers and all that may be less confident than their male counterparts when it comes to financial planning for themselves. But over the past year in particular, it seems more women have become interested in actively engaging their finances themselves. So this morning on Perspectives, our all-star panel of experts will be talking about ways that women and men, too, can educate themselves and prioritize their fiscal goals, master the basics of smart investing, and protect that all-important retirement nest egg that we all hope to have the day that we shuffle off into what comes after work, which may be another career. Who the heck knows? So let's talk to our folks right now after we meet them. And we'll start with Diana Curidan, who is vice president and private banker with Hancock Bank. Hey, Diana, good to see you.
How are you, Tom?
And you had the big gun in a couple weeks ago, didn't you?
We did, yes. Thank you. Our CEO came from Gulfport.
Nice guy. Sat down with him a little bit, and we had a chat about things of financial stuff, of which I still wish I knew more about, but I hope to learn more today with your help. Thanks so much for coming. We have Kenita Peterson, CPA and CFST, Director of Tax Services with Thomas Howell Ferguson here in Tallahassee. Hi, Kenita.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Kelby Attardi, Chief Financial Officer of Tallahassee Orthopedic Clinic, one of my favorite hangs. Good to see
Great.
You.
Thanks.
Yeah, I was out there a couple months ago, had a little glitch, and boy, they patch up pretty darn good there. How long have you been with the folks out at TOC?
16 years.
Wow. Okay. And following every penny that has come through your office, huh?
That is my job, yes.
Let's start here. Diana, just a quick overall thing, and that is why is it important for women to take an active role in planning for financial future, particularly if they have a significant other who says, look, numbers are my thing. I've got it taken care of. Don't worry about it. All mine.
Well, I think primarily there's a few reasons for that, is that women are working. Three quarters of women work, and 62 of them do the financial planning and the pay the bills, and women are living longer, and they typically make less than men, and so there's a reason that they do need to plan for their financial future.
Okay. But one of the big things, and my wife has been going through this because she is now on the fast track to heading for retirement for sure. And Kenita, since you're with Thomas Howell Ferguson and that very respected bunch of great folks who deal with finances and all of that, how do you find out, okay, if I am, say, even years away from retirement, but I want to start having a deeper involvement in my own finances, how do I start pulling all that information together? Yeah, I get the stuff from my employer on, what my 401k is doing and all that, but how do I aggregate that so I can start wrapping my arms around it a bit better?
Well, you can always seek the advice of someone that's what they do for a living. They can help you put the pieces of the puzzle together and make sure you're asking your employer the right questions and make sure that you are, for example, a financial advisor investing in the right items for your anticipated retirement date. So definitely seeking out counsel. You've got all the pieces of the puzzle. You just need a little help putting the pieces together. Someone else definitely could help you do that.
Okay. And there's a lot of things that you have to look even beyond just the simple, I've got a 401k, or I am going to roll over my pension if I'm an FRS, Florida Retirement System participant, or that sort of thing. You also have to think about things like healthcare, Kelby. Is that one of the considerations too?
Yes, absolutely. Healthcare has gotten to be so expensive, and there's obviously some requirements now to have health insurance, and those are good ways to protect your wealth, because a lot of people without health insurance do, it can be very costly for them if they don't have health insurance.
I noticed that when I was between jobs the last go around, and we became eligible for COBRA. And it really does have to do with a big snake with very large poison fangs, because I could not believe the hit we were taking through COBRA payments. And it really gave me a new appreciation for how generous my previous employer had been in picking up a big chunk of that health care. But I noticed that on tax form this year, there's a whole separate bunch of questions that you are asked about the status of your health care.
Right. So the Affordable Care Act actually mandated that everybody have health insurance. And so that's the nature of all those questions. And there are actually penalties if you don't have health insurance now. So there's a lot of information out there to purchase health insurance and a lot of ways that you can do that.
And here we do have the National Healthcare Exchange here in Florida,
correct,
unlike some states that have their own set up there. But if you don't, you are we coming up on another open enrollment period?
So the open enrollment period is towards the end of the year, and it starts in January. So we've got a little ways to go, but there's other avenues to look for if you are, you know, in the middle of a job change or, you know, just on the market. There's a lot of different ways to look at that. You know, for example, if you're under the age of 26, you can actually still stay on your parents' health insurance, which is very beneficial for some people. You can go, obviously, through a lot of employers offer health insurance for their employees, so that's always a good area to look. And then in addition to that, there's individual agents, insurance agents, locally and online, that can offer coverage as well. So there's a lot of different areas to look for health insurance these days.
Okay. Diana Curitan, I heard something the other day that really scared the heck out of me. In fact, I think it was on NPR talking about the incredible percentage of Americans, male and female, who have not planned for retirement. People in their 40s and 50s, even some in their 60s. And they're expecting Social Security to pick up the slack?
Unfortunately, I do see that a lot, even with the clients that I work with, that people are coming to me in their 40s or 50s and saying, I want to retire in 5 or 10 years. So you're right, that is a short period of time to be able to accomplish what they want. And that's what I'm hoping for today, that we're able to reach out to people, talk about how important it is to start planning for your future, for the retirement, especially the things that are available to women. So I think that's a very good point.
And just in general terms, what are some of the options available if you have found yourself in that you know, oh my gosh, I didn't have a 401k, my employer really didn't have a pension program or anything like that, and here I find myself in a real midlife crisis because I've got nothing?
Well, that's a very good question. A lot of this is really finding out, set your goals. What goals do you want to accomplish? Is this as simple as I want to start saving for my child's college education, or is it for retirement? You know, there's so many different things that you have to be prepared to do, and it is setting goals. But it also really depends on the amount of time that you have. Do you have time to research this on your own? Can you look on the internet? Or do you really need to seek, as Kenita was saying, and Kelby, an advisor or somebody that you can talk to that knows a little bit more about it? So really you have to determine how much time you have to invest to this. And I think that's probably the biggest problem, is that people don't have the time to do this. But honestly, probably the easiest way to get started, and we've talked about this before, is if your company has a sponsored plan, like a 401k or 403b, that is one of the easiest ways to get started in investing. Another option is an automatic savings plan, is if you don't have that foundation of a savings account or money put aside for the rainy day, then an automatic savings plan, just money from your checking to your savings account that you take out every month, that is very helpful. And
yeah,
those are easy things to do.
And that may be, again, like you were saying, Kenita Peterson, to bring in some of the, dare we say, big guns, the folks who are the professionals in this, because if you need to set aside more resources for retirement, you may very well have to revamp your entire household budget to free up the money in order to do that, right?
That's absolutely right. I mean, everybody works with a budget, so you only have so many dollars. And like Diana said, if you have to set your goals and then allocate the resources that you have to accomplishing those.
Well, that means that and just about everything, whether it's getting your car repaired or you need some people to come in and try to chase the invasive plants out of your yard or anything else, you're calling on the folks with the expertise and the background and the knowledge and the wherewithal to make that happen much more effectively and efficiently than we could do it ourselves. So that's what I'm kind of picking up as a common thread here amongst all three of you, is that if you have any questions, seek some professional counseling. But is that expensive? If I would retain a professional financial planning group or a financial counselor or whatever, am I talking big bucks here? Or?
Well, realistically, there are some organizations, and we do offer that for our clients, for our private banking clients, where we do a financial plan for free. But there are different financial plans that you will pay for their services. And again, it depends on the complexity of the plan. I mean, in some cases, you're probably talking $1,500 to maybe even upwards of $5,000. But just to have an advisor, to meet with an advisor, that is free, and to get some advice. But once they actually manage the money, then you will have some fees associated with that.
Okay. I talked to a financial planning buddy of mine not too terribly long ago, and he was helping a lot of folks just from ground zero, people who maybe had no household budget or a very minimal kind of financial oversight for their budget, locate here are some areas where just by modifying your behavior a little bit, maybe cutting back on the number of times you go out for lunch, even brown bag it a couple days a week, and forgo the trip to, dare I say, Cool Beans Cafe or any, some of these other places where folks might frequent for lunch. That would free up over a period of time a significant amount of money that then could be diverted into retirement or maybe one less movie a month or something of that. It doesn't have to be total privation, but just by changing a few things around, you'll have a few more dollars to work with, and that can go towards the basis of a retirement program. And we're talking about retirement and investing and taxes and those kinds of considerations when it comes to getting a better handle on your finances, particularly finances for women, as more and more ladies take control of their financial situation on their own. You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, and we'll be right back. We are back on Perspectives, and money matters. It does. It really, especially if you are getting towards the point in life when perhaps you will have a little bit less money because you're going to retire. Some people actually retire nowadays. I can't believe it. Someone asked me the other day when I was going to retire, and I said, I don't know, 20, 30 years, maybe? And they said, how old are you? And I said, you don't really want to know. People are putting that off, though, I guess. What is... Is it Diana Cureton, the overall financial uncertainties, as we like to say, you know, the market is nervous? I didn't know markets could be nervous, but there are a lot of things that you cannot project. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. But some people saying, well, you know, I was going to retire at 65, and then I decided, no, I don't know what is going to happen. I better hang in for another couple, 3 years. You seeing more of that now?
I've seen more of that. One thing that I think also probably impacts that is Social Security, that the benefit that you take at 62 versus 70, you could double the amount of money that you get. So I think that that does come into play with people's decisions. But also, we're living longer. The average female is actually, the life expectancy is 81 years old. So I think that we're thinking we can't retire anymore at 55 or 60. You know, we have such a long time horizon. So in that respect, I think people are reconsidering what they're doing, and life's expensive. So,
boy, isn't that the truth? Well, while you were talking, our esteemed Morning Edition host Ronald J. Eben just put something in my hand, which totally buttresses what you just said. It says taking Social Security benefits early comes with a price. Yet more than 4 in 10 Americans age 50 and over say they'll dip into the program before reaching full retirement age. This is a report from the Associated Press and the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. The poll said 44% report Social Security will be their biggest source of income during retirement. Nearly half. Americans can begin, as you said, collecting as early as age 62, but benefits drop by up to 30% if you wait until age 70. Then you can nearly double that, as you indicated. But waiting until full retirement age may not be an option for many. Among those with incomes under $50,000, nearly 60% say they're more anxious than secure about their savings for retirement. And people with higher incomes appear less anxious, which would seem logical, but still 40% of those with incomes of $100,000 or more worry that their savings may not be sufficient. That is a lot of anxiety out there.
I think the biggest benefit for us and the one thing that we can tell your listeners is that, honestly, for me, it's starting early. I started investing in the company retirement account at 21 years old. So it's just compound interest, which Kenita and Kelby know much about, is just if you can start early. And so if we can change someone's behavior today by starting early, that's hopefully what we want to accomplish.
Well, with the uncertainty too, and maybe, Kenita, I'll throw this one at you here. More than one person of my acquaintance has had to dip into their, and they took the penalties and the tax hit and everything else, but they had to dip into their 401k on an emergency basis when they were between jobs. Worst thing you can possibly do? Or among them?
Among them, yes. I mean, some people just don't have other options. So, you know, outside of just the retirement planning, making sure you have a little nest egg so you do have some type of emergency savings. But absolutely, you're right. In certain circumstances, you can get the penalty, waived because of certain reasons. But that is a big penalty to pay in addition to not having those funds when you go to retire, because now you have gotten off from your original goal. I'd also say that, you know, they make it really easy these days to save. So just starting, just do it. It's really easy to set $25 away. You can auto debit. You can do it with your 401k. You can do the same thing with IRA. So if you're with an employer that doesn't have a 401k, you can do an IRA and you can have them auto debit $25 from your account. Just do something. And when you look back, you'll be really glad you did.
Okay. And as long as we're in a saving mode there, Kelby Tardy, what about maybe even starting your own health care account before retirement? You may have a good health care plan with your employer, as you were saying before, but to have a little something in reserve, your own health care savings account for maybe when you are not with that employer anymore and Medicare is not going to cover the whole tab and that sort of thing?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. There are health savings accounts, which are pre-tax basis. So that's definitely an option. And in addition to that, even just putting some money aside that's earmarked towards healthcare is a good idea, especially as you start to get older. Those copays and deductibles and all that stuff can really add up. And depending on what health plan you have, those can be significant in some cases. So I think to Kenita, Kenita's point is, you know, start early, even if it's with a little bit. And then, you know, one good thing that I've learned is, you know, every time you get a raise, it may not be a lot, but increase that amount at that time too. And that can, you know, over time, that additional amount will add up and add up, and you don't even feel that it increase.
What, you're asking me to give up the vacation to Cozumel I've waited so long to take? But that is still over the long term. That is a more prudent use of that money than just going out and blowing it on something because it feels so good at the time, right?
Right. We've got, you know, there's so many people that want our money, and you have to create a plan for your money and how you're going to spend it, and then try and work to that plan. And sometimes that plan may be that trip to Cozumel, and that would be great, you know, and you can start saving, you know, early so that you are not having to put that on a credit card or, you know, those types of things. And that's definitely the way to do it.
Okay. Well, Diana Cureton, that is a wonderful segue into something I have for you, and that is about, I guess, some potential investment pitfalls. Everyone wants to use your money for something, and usually they don't want to use it in ways that could necessarily be in your best interest. So what are some, I guess, red flags that people should look out for when something sounds great and you get you either hear it on the radio or TV or online or something else about an investment opportunity that they just got to check out?
Well, honestly, it's like anything else. You need to do your due diligence because – and also the old saying, if it's too good to be true, it usually is. But that's where I think the professional counsel comes into play that we've talked about before, is finding a financial advisor, your CPA, your attorney. And really, if there's an idea – and we do this in the bank as well. If there's an idea that you're thinking about doing, it's a good idea to bring it to someone else that you trust, that's a trusted advisor, and run that idea by them. And just have somebody else take a look at what you're looking at. And I think that will help avoid the pitfalls. And a lot of ways it's just talking to other friends and finding advisors and people that they work with, the professionals, but also there's professional association websites that you can check to actually do diligence on the people that you're talking to about getting the advice from.
Okay, Kenita Peterson, there's the same question here as it applies to taxation. My daughter has been able to do the short form for years and years and years because her situation has not changed. She just made a big move physically and a career change all at the same time. Her situation may be significantly different this coming tax year than it's been in previous tax years. Is maybe this a good time for her to get up with someone and say, hey, do I need to do something different when it comes to whether it's the moving expenses or some of the other things she's had to do?
I would say absolutely. One of the items that happened actually last year was Congress passing the PATH Act. And although it did a lot for 2015, what it did for us going forward, it made permanent about a dozen provisions that historically, we've had to wait on Congress to act on until the end of the year. But now we can really do proactive tax planning, taking those things into consideration. So it's definitely worth, especially in a change in circumstance, going from simplicity to complex, to know what those extra advantages are, knowing what you need to accumulate documents for to get the most deductions at the end of the day and lower your tax burden. And then also what additional options you have for, like you said, retirement. You know, what can you do with this extra money that can help you meet your goals and objectives?
Well, Kelby Tardy, there's tax considerations when it comes to health care as well, right?
Correct. There are, yes. This year we talked about earlier, there's a penalty if you don't purchase health insurance. That amount is $695 per person this year, or 2.5% of your income, whichever is higher. So that can be a significant amount of money if you choose to not purchase health insurance. In addition, if you're self-employed, you do get a deduction for your health insurance premiums. That offsets your income. And then we talked a little bit about there's flexible spending accounts, which are all pre-tax dollars that you can put aside. That is typically offered through your employer. But if they offer that, it's a great option for you to basically have money pre-tax go towards your copays or dental bills or eyeglasses or whatever it may be.
Talking about financial planning and looking forward to retirement and how to set up savings accounts and seeking professional advice when it comes to money matters, particularly for women. Here today on Perspectives, we've got Diana Cureton with Hancock Bank and Kenita Peterson from Thomas Howell Ferguson and Kelby Tardy, who you just heard from Tallahassee Orthopedic Clinic, working there as the CFO of that organization. A reminder, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. You just go to that aforementioned address on the web, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, and then click Perspectives. It'll come leaping out at you. We archive past shows and try to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs. So by the end of today, guys, we can go back and listen to ourselves and say, oh, I wish I'd said this or that or these or those. But we'll try to get in as much as we possibly can. And to our listeners, you are always welcome to be part of the proceedings at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809 if it's long distance from you to Florida's capital city. Diana Cureton, let's get back to some basics here. In your experience, why do women seem to approach finances in many ways differently from men? What are some of the underpinnings of that, do you think?
I would say that a good part of that is women are typically more conservative. And it's funny because I look at the clients that I have, and men are typically the one that that tell me that I'd like to have a side account, that I can invest myself. Women typically use professional advice versus men. But I think a lot of what they have to do is, again, just as we talked about earlier, is we live longer. We typically make less. And so we need to be more in charge of our financial future.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even thinking here, Kenita Peterson, from my mom, who was the Lord High Head Honcho at when it came to the day-to-day budget situation at home. She knew where every penny was. And yet when it came to the larger considerations, be it purchasing insurance or looking at different retirement options or that, she always deferred to Dad for some reason. And as much as I love my dad, he was clueless about a lot of this stuff. Mom was a much more savvy money manager than my dad was. Do we still see that?
I think you do see that. I do think that, you know, women, we typically take charge of so many different elements of our everyday life. You know, you have the child care. You have, you know, maybe you have a household employee or a nanny. I mean, you have all these different elements that not only affect your goals, your budget, but also your taxes. And so they've got all these different elements that they already have their hands around. Just to take it that next level to be able to understand the dynamics to really take the facts to make the best decisions for the household isn't very difficult. And perhaps it is that they're more conservative. They want affirmation that the decisions are correct. But I think that women these days really are empowered by the decisions they are already making to take it the next step further and really make a difference.
Yeah, and no longer subject to maybe some of the old stereotypes that used to be out there. They know, oh, the women are, you know, they're going out and blowing money. They're shopping all the time. The men are the savers. They're the conservative, prudent investment type of thing. And yet, that has no gender distinction. Anyone can go any way on this stuff, right? What do you think, Kelby?
Yes. I mean, I think I've seen, you know, both in my family and friends, it go both ways. Sometimes the women are definitely the spenders. They also tend to spend on different things than men. And so they tend to spend on their family and that those types of things where, you know, men can also be spenders. They tend to spend a little bit more on themselves and not so much the family, not because, you know, there's anything wrong with that, but there definitely just seems to be a difference in how they spend their money.
Oh, I'm buying this John boat for my family. What are you talking about? heard that more than once, too. Looking at, if I could, Diana Cureton, one of the other considerations here, though, since women, as you said, tend generally to be maybe a little bit more conservative. If you get into the retirement planning situation earlier in life, you may have, I've heard this 1,000 times, have a higher tolerance for risk. And yet you may have some women investors who are more adverse to that risk.
That is true that your age plays a role in that piece, because if you do start earlier, you're right, you have a longer time horizon, so you can take additional risk. It's usually the women that you see that come to you in their 40s and 50s that don't have as much of a time horizon. So I think that you're right, that does lend for them to be more conservative.
Okay, and you've got to come up with this mix between, oh my gosh, the multiplicity of options that you have when it gets into whether it's mutual funds or different types of individual stocks or the bond market or mm-hmm. all that. And that, again, really, you need someone to help walk you through that minefield.
Again, if you have the time, you can research a lot of this yourself. I mean, you know, there's a lot of information on the internet. But in my personal opinion, and most likely women do this, is they do seek professional advice because you do have so many other options. And some options make more sense in financial positions than others. So you really have to look at each individual financial situation and find out what makes sense for you. It really does need to be customized.
Okay. And I have to ask all three of you here, any of you folks do any of the online trading that is out there? I mean, not professionally, but, you know, for yourselves? Does anyone jump into that market here?
I don't.
I don't. Just like, you know, if someone has a complicated tax situation, you would hope that they would seek a tax advisor. I, when investing money, rely on a financial advisor to help direct me in line with our goals, both retirement and non-retirement, to help us make the decisions on risk tolerance, timing, et cetera. So relying on a professional myself.
Yeah, when I see that on particularly TV for some of these do-it-yourself kind of investment things, why do I keep thinking of things like FanDuel and DraftKings? It just seems to be almost a crapshoot that you can, in a matter of moments, become a professional trader. You know, and because you have all this research, but what do you do with that? You know, if you have not done this all of your life, or at least for a significant part of your career, how do you figure this stuff out? It seems horrifically complicated.
It is. It definitely is complicated, and that's why I don't personally do it. I don't know about Kelby, but we definitely.
You look like a gambling type there, Kelby.
I'm sure that I do. No, I think if somebody wants to do that, I think that there is. You know, if you've got an extra few thousand dollars and that's what you want to do and try your hand at it, I think that, you know, there's a place for that. Not that you're going to necessarily get rich, but, you know, make sure that it's money that you could afford to lose, that it's not what your entire retirement account or retirement savings. And, you know, try it out, do the research, and you may do okay.
Uh-huh. It sounds like the same advice if you were going to Biloxi. I don't know.
Yes.
414-1234, women and finances and planning for retirement and prudent investing in those kinds of topics, what we're talking about here on Perspectives. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. And we have Diana Curitan and Kenita Peterson and Kelby Tardy here with us to address any of your questions or concerns when it comes to high finance or low finance for that moment. We'll be right back. One thing you can certainly say about money, there's never enough of it, is there? I mean, no matter what you want to do or how well you plan or look ahead or try to prognosticate what the future may bring, it's always good to have a little bit in reserve. And that can really be a challenge. That's why we have our panel of experts here on Perspectives today to talk about financial considerations, particularly when it comes to women taking charge of their own finances and looking ahead to the future. In that regard, listening to one of these nationally syndicated financial planners on late night radio the other evening, and this happened to be a guy who called up, but it could have easily been a woman who was finding himself without sufficient investment resources, just not enough to put into maybe an additional set aside for retirement or a do-it-yourself healthcare account or those sorts of things. And what the guy on the other end of the microphone told him was, get another job. Which, I mean, that's easily said. Sure, run out and grab one here right after lunch. But the necessity for some folks to maybe take on an additional job or source of income in order to buttress these resources, particularly in the realm of retirement or health care of all. Is that ever a part of the counseling mix here, Diana?
I think so. And it kind of goes back to what each of us have said, but really you have to have that savings account. And, you know, perfect point to what Kelby said is, you know, you get a raise, let's say it's 2%, 3%, whatever it might be, take a percent of that and put it into a savings account, or take a percent of that and put it into your company-sponsored plan if you have a company-sponsored plan. And I think there's really truly three foundations, because you're right, with limited resources, it's a lot more difficult than, okay, I'm giving you $1 million to invest. I mean, clearly that's a different situation. So if I were in that position as Kelby talked about, let's start a savings account. Start putting a little bit of money aside. In addition to that, another a three-pronged approach would be putting into my company-sponsored or an IRA. I mean, you know, Kenita pointed this out too. Just take, you know, $50 or $25, and it will add up. It will add up. And then the third thing is you can actually buy stock from companies directly, which I actually started doing that when I was probably in my early 20s. And you're able to put $50 – oh, I still put $50 every month and buy GE stock. So now I have, you know, several hundred shares of GE stock. But to me, that's an easy way to get started where people – I think you're right – are a little bit concerned that, okay, I don't have this pot of money that I can invest. So you're right. They're intimidated by that. So how can they start off and how can they do so with the resources that they have? And those are three things that I think are, you know, easy ways to get started.
And all three are baby steps. You're not talking about major changes in lifestyle or, yes, I'm going to have to go out and work, you know, midnight to six at some, you know, convenience store in order to get a few extra bucks to sock away into a retirement fund. You can do this just little by little. Right?
It kind of goes back to what you said, maybe not eating lunch every day, maybe eating lunch 28 times out of 30, but taking those two lunches that you had and put that money away, and you will be very surprised at what you'll have at the end of the day.
Okay. Kenita, are there any just rules of thumb breakpoints I should have in my bank account, the most liquid form of emergency fund that I have? What, 2 months' worth of income, or is there something I can look at and say, yeah, this is the minimum I should have?
Well, 2 to 3 months is definitely one of the recommended thresholds. I would say, you know, start with $1,000. Start with something, you know, put – I think 2 to 3 months worth of income seems very large for some people. And so if you have a goal, $1,000, and then you reach that goal, and then you kind of reassess where you are. I think it's really important, kind of going back to what can you give up, sit down – write it out. Look at how you're spending your money. A lot of people don't realize where the little Starbucks coffees and picking up, going through the fast food chain, where are your dollars going? Sit down, write down a budget, and kind of look at every single penny. Where did it go out the last couple of months? Then I think you can see the opportunities for redirecting those funds. But start baby steps. Start really little, and then 2 to 3 months, that would be great. But I think a lot of people think that's a really large goal.
Mm-hmm. And not just for personal matters. Kelby, I'm thinking that there are a lot of businesses that don't even really have a good budgetary plan, whether they're run by men or women or whatever, that it's sort of like seat of the pants and, man, we didn't do too well last month. We wound up with more bills than revenue, but we'll do better next month, you know.
Right. Hope is not a plan. And so, you know, yes, budgets for businesses are very, very important. They help the owner understand, you know, where they need to go. Hopefully that budget is in line with that, to make sure that the revenue is going to cover their expected costs for the next year. But also, you know, if they need to purchase equipment or invest in the company for the future, they may need to get a loan for that, and the banks may request that information as well. So the budget, just like in our home lives, the budget for business is, you know, invaluable for making sure that we actually get to where we want to be.
Ah, okay. Well, you hit on another topic here. You said the magic word loan, which means debt, which means something else. That does that have to be part of the plan, do you think, Diana, that in accumulating additional resources, another goal is to work down the amount of indebtedness that we may have in our lives?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very debt averse, so albeit kind of funny that I work at the bank, but no, I think that is definitely part of the plan. And again, looking at your budget is, and especially reducing your credit card debt. To me, that is something that is counterproactive if you're trying to save in one hand, but you've got credit card debt in the other. And it's just really looking at prioritizing which debt you want to pay off. But again, I would start with credit card, any unsecured loans. And most of us do have mortgages, and there are some tax advantages to having mortgages. But you're right. I definitely think reduction in debt is a key part of the plan.
That always just fascinates me how, with the prime rate now just buzzing around, you know, zero and a fraction for all these years, and we'll probably see an increase in rates. Yeah, mm-hmm. The Fed's going to bump that up. But then still to have some credit card, you know, for their least worthy customers, I guess, that are around the 30% APR, that mm-hmm. just strikes me as We used to have usury laws. What happened? Not asking you to editorialize, that's for sure. But there, we do have that huge gap between what money costs on one side and what it costs on the other. And if you're a consumer, it costs considerably more than just about anyone else. So we need to get out from under that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. We only have fewer than 10 minutes here to wrap up our thoughts here on perspectives when it comes to financial planning, particularly for women to whom a lot of this really didn't start, I think, kicking in until certainly the current generation, but even just the past few years. And Kelby, even in your job out there at Tallahassee Orthopedic Clinic, you're seeing more and more coworkers and friends and all just saying, hey, it's time for me to step up and do this, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is, I think there's more women in the workforce these days. So that's certainly driving some of that. Women who've gone through divorce, who've gone through the death of a spouse. And so we see a lot of that, both with our employees, but also with patients that come into our office. And so, the women do want to know what their options are, asking for raises, all of those things can help, women get on, a firm footing.
Yeah, and for you, Kenita, I'm old enough to remember when accounting firms, with the exception of the receptionist, had virtually no women that field.
Absolutely correct. I mean, there has been a tremendous shift, not only in the number of women, but women in leadership. It's not equal by any means, but we're definitely making progress and, really making a point to mentor those that are up and coming in not only, the firm, but also choosing accounting as a career, to encourage more to go into accounting. There's a lot of different options, and you don't have to necessarily become a CPA. As you can see, we're all different, have different uses of our finance education, and I think that there is a lot of opportunity, and it's very versatile. When you talk about get another job, it allows you a lot of different opportunities in a lot of different areas. So, just mentoring and coaching them that this is just a great career choice, I think, is important and can be a very successful career choice.
Mm-hmm. And Diana Curtin, we're seeing that in the heady world of high finance, be it private bankers or Wall Street, or there are not, again, you don't have total gender equity here, but there are more and more women that are involved with this now. And as a career choice, I mean, finance is what drives our contemporary world today.
Absolutely. And again, to go to that point, we do. We see many more women in the financial industry. And I think a lot of it is how, back to an earlier question, is the role of the female plays has evolved. We are in the workplace. Our responsibilities have changed. And I think that that's why I think the financial piece is such a component of that.
As we look at things such as STEM education, which is critical, of course, science, technology, engineering, and math, but maybe there should be an F in there somewhere for finance, because that is something that an old friend of mine who was a high school teacher taught his kids. He was an English teacher, but during each year, he would have the kids sit down and have each of them work out a little household budget. He'd posit, okay, you just graduated from high school, and we'll pretend that you're getting $10,000. It was big money back then. $10,000 a year. And the kids go, ooh, oh, wow. All they could see was that lump sum. But he would have them sit down and start to work out a budget. And this is boys and girls. And for many... I think some fellow teachers said, why are you teaching them that? The men will take over that. Is it? No, everyone needs to know that. These are basic life skills that every single person needs to know. And maybe that's something we need to do with our kids, too. If we have this savvy, it's something we need to pass along to them, because Lord knows with today's education system and the need to keep on top of standardized testing and stuff, there may not be any time for today's teachers to kind of take a week or so aside to teach kids how to do those kinds of things for them. So.
And that's true. I think this is definitely a life skill. And one thing that we've done for our children is the importance of putting some money aside to save. You've got your bucket to spend, but also you've got your bucket for charity, I mean, to give to others and to help other people in the community. And I think that you're right, that that starts at home and that starts at an early age. And I think that that does help. If you have that mindset early on, they can carry that forward.
Yeah, and Chiquita, there are tax benefits to gifting too, right?
There are tax benefits. There are deductions on your individual 1040. Of course, if you are contributing to a 501c3. You can also, if you have a large estate, you can also gift to your children or anyone else tax-free up to $14,000 a year. So there are a lot of different ways that, you know, gifting can be incorporated into your financial plan.
Well, I'm thinking there's also something else here, and Kelby, this would be in your if part of your contributions include the medical community because of, you know, you have a lot of situations that you have to tend to. There still is a deduction for medical expenses above a certain point of your income, right?
Yes, there is still. You can still, if you itemize deductions, there is still a deduction above 10% of your income.
Okay, but you've got to meet that break point before you
Correct.
Can deduct.
Oh. Correct, and you have to itemize deductions as well. So not everybody does. If you don't own a home and those types of things, then you may not get to that threshold. So,
and if you are into the realm of the standard 1040, it's still helpful to have someone assist you in putting that together because a lot of changes, too, in the tax laws, right, Kenita?
That's right. That's right. I'll tell you, the permanency that we discussed earlier really is helping out. One of the deductions that's really good for Floridians is the permanency of the sales tax deduction. You know, with us not having a local and a state income tax here, we're allowed to take those deductions on our Schedule A as well. They've permanentized the enhanced child tax credit, some higher education credits that we were talking about that definitely women want to look at when they're looking at college planning, the earned income tax credit. One of the ones that small businesses, I think, are really ecstatic about is the permanency of the Section 179 at $500,000. And this allows immediate deducting of the assets that they would purchase, the qualified assets that we purchase in the current year. So that has been as low as, you know, $19,000, $20,000, and we've had to wait to Congress to determine that number each year, and usually we know in December. So that allows us to do some planning there, too.
Yeah, but once again, word to the wise that with this moving target that is the U.S. tax code, and in some cases for businesses, state taxes, since, again, no income tax, personal income tax here in Florida, it is always a good idea to consult a professional advisor if you have any questions on these things and not just take Uncle Pete or Aunt Molly's recommendations because they may be totally off base. Folks, just a few minutes remaining to kind of go around the table for some final thoughts. Kelby Tardy, what do you think? What's your best advice? A young woman comes in and says, what do you think I should do when it comes to getting my fiscal house in order? What would you tell her?
Well, I think that there's a lot of things to really look at. I mean, the first, and I think we've touched on it a little bit, but, you know, women tend to not negotiate their salaries as well as men do. And so, you know, the first thing would be look at that and possibly do some research about her job and take that back to her employer and advocate for herself for a raise if she, you know, if it is, necessary based on her job. So that would be the first thing. And then I think, as has been touched on, just get started. Just get started saving some money for retirement, looking at, you know, various insurances. Make sure that you know what's going on in your household as far as spending and saving and insurances and all those kinds of things are all very important.
And always check beneath the cushions on the sofa for pennies. Kenita Peterson, what do you think?
Look at what you spent, create a plan, and then do it. So don't get distracted by, you know, we tend to put ourselves last, put the children first, put the household first. Take time, make the plan, and then just do it. Hold yourself accountable and just do it.
And Diana Curtin.
I would first say a budget. go ahead and set go ahead and have a detailed budget to see where you're spending your money, where you can cut back. Second thing is start saving. Just every little bit counts, and be accountable and try to educate yourself as much as possible on a lot of these different topics, because you know this information just empowers you. So if that would really honestly be the takeaway that I would have.
What I'm hearing is fear not, take control, and have a happier life. We got nods of assent all around the table. Yay, Diana Curitan, Kenita Peterson, and Kelby Tardy. Thank you all for coming in for Perspectives today. We appreciate it. And happy Memorial Day, too, guys.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Hey, speaking of taxes and such, the city of Tallahassee is now in the midst of its yearly budget building exercise. Yet there remains some controversy about how the city handles its finances and how its employees distance themselves from possible ethical conflicts. So next week on Perspectives, members of the city of Tallahassee Ethics Board will talk it over. You're invited to join the conversation then. Have a great weekend.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.